Before we start, I want to just share that we actually have two papers back-to-back. The first is Navigating a Different Adolescent Sexual Landscape, Reflections of LGB Young Adults on Their Planning and Experiences of First Sex. The second, Perceived Impact of Parental and School Messages About Non-Heterosexuality on the Sexual Lives of LGBT Adolescents, a Retrospective Qualitative Study with LGB Young Adults. And so what we're going to be talking about for both of these papers is the same set of data, so rather than you hearing it, the methodology twice, we're doing it together once. I want to acknowledge both my co-author, Eva Goldfarb, and our incredible research assistant, Paul Santos. Paul, you can stand up and take a bow, who actually worked with us on the publication of a paper from the first phase of the study in which we interviewed did focus groups with 74 college students reflecting back on the first time that they had sex and the circumstances and discussions and messages preceding and immediately following that first sex. And at that time, we were thinking about it with our goal to make it possible for parents and peers and teachers to intervene during that period when they're thinking about becoming sexually active, to reduce the emotional consequences, pregnancy, STDs, and basically make it healthier, better, safer, and where appropriate later. As a result of that study, the overwhelming majority of students who volunteered to participate in that study were heterosexual, and the small group of students who identified as LGB really seemed to have some very different kinds of experiences and thoughts. And as a result of working on that paper, it really was Paul who did the yeoman's job of working to engage us in phase two of the study, which involved 35 LGB-identifying youth on campus during 8 different focus groups in 2014. 2 of the focus groups were part of that original study in 2011. We did active recruitment through the university's LGBTQ Center, drop-in center, and student organization, as well as a campus-wide email that said, "Would you tell us about your first time?" Was IRB-approved study. Our study demographics, interestingly, was actually more male than female, which is unique. Usually it's the women who volunteer for studies of this nature. Certainly in past work that we've done, we tend to get more women volunteers than male volunteers. And the ethnic breakdown really reflected that of the campus, about 70% white, about 30% combination of African American, Latino, and other. These participants filled out a small survey, a quick survey at the beginning, telling us about the age that they were at what they defined as their first sex. But we also had a question asking them about what age they were in what they defined as the first time they'd engaged in any kind of sexual behavior, petting, kissing, making out, any of those things. The average age for first sex was about 16.7, which is about consistent with other data. The interesting thing we noted was that the difference between that first experience of petting and other kinds of sexual behaviors and the time that they identified as their first actual sex, what they identified as it, was actually much shorter in the LGB group than in the general, mostly heterosexual groups that we had interviewed and done focus groups with in the first phase. And that's actually significant later as we talk a little bit about what they told us. The focus groups were audio recorded and an observer took notes, that's Paul. The audio tapes were transcribed. We developed a code book with sort of our a priori themes going in and then what we heard from the young people. And then 2 graduate assistants, Paul as well as another who was not involved in the study at all, coded the transcripts so that we could look independently, so that we could look at reliability across them and identified some representative quotes. So I wanted to talk first about this notion of experiences of first sex and kind of the themes that emerged from this. So the first thing we asked them was what their definitions were, since this was not a traditional vaginal sexual intercourse, which is typically what's thought of when we talk about first time or when the field talks about first time. And it was either genital, oral, contact for both men and women. For men, it was predominantly penetration. One of the things that was notable was that many of them talked about something they identified as 2 first times, very often a first time with someone of the other gender or a first time with someone of the same gender. And so that was really kind of interesting and telling, as we'll see going forward, their definition of those two first times. And for the women, many of them talked about their two first times in terms of their real first time being the one where they felt an emotional connection that they didn't have in their other first time. So I had a section, this is, and you'll know, in blue, all of our quotes are males, and in red, all of our quotes are females. So one male said, I had sexual intercourse with a girl and then sexual intercourse with a guy, and I identify as gay, so I didn't really know which one I was going to talk about or identify as my first time when I came today. The woman said, I immediately thought about my two first loves, and not even just sexually, but emotionally. There was one that I thought was really more sexual, and the other was one I thought much more emotional. We looked a lot in our first round at this issue of pleasure and pain, and what we found in this round was it was very much contextual. That if it was men talking about sex with men, many of them talked about the fact that it kind of didn't work, they didn't know about lube, or they learned later after they were with other men that it could really be much better than it was that first time, and once or twice they identified it as great that first time. When it was men with women, they, unlike the men in our mostly heterosexual groups, they said it was okay, but none of them defined it as great, which was quite different from our other groups. Women whose first experience was with men identified pain, regret, and virtually no pleasure, and not as surprising as I think, certainly not surprising, is that women who identified their first experience with women almost universally talked about pleasure, satisfaction, the fact that it felt natural, that they were exploring someone whose body they knew, whereas in the first phase, the women, the heterosexual women, many, many of them talked about regret after that first experience. So looking back on it after having sex with my current boyfriend, this was a young male, I'm like, that sucked, looking back. But at the time, it was very pleasurable because I knew nothing else. And a young woman said, I loved it. It wasn't even the sexual part. It was the emotional part. It was the connection that was the best feeling I could ever have. And another young woman said, I think for me, being with a girl was more comforting because it was like exploring your own body through somebody else. Very, very different kinds of responses than what we had in the first phase. The other thing that was really notable was in our first phase with mostly heterosexual young people, they reported a great deal of planning for sex. Many young people say, oh no, it just happened. But when we pressed them, they had a date, a time, they knew their parents were going to be out, they had a condom, they knew what they were going to be wearing, they had really engaged in a great deal of planning. But in these groups, there was much less of that planning. They were much more inclined to talk about it kind of just happened, one thing led to the next. And as I mentioned before, in many cases, it was the first time that they had had any kind of sexual experience, which then led to whatever they defined as their first sex. For some of them, the lack of planning also had to do with lack of information, for example, regarding the need of lube, the need for lube. So one young man said, I don't think we really discussed it. It was just, we'd known each other for a while, it just happened. A young woman said, I was just a deer in headlights. I had no clue what I was doing. We were hanging out at her house, we started kissing and stuff, and then we were just like trying out different things. In terms of condom use, one of the things that was very notable for the men was that they had very good intentions. But they didn't always act on those. So I think he had the intention of putting it on, but I guess everything happened so fast because I was just like, let's do this and get it over with, that he forgot that he was clean. Another said, I had these high standards, but in the moment I just forgot about it. We tried it a couple of times, and we used protection just to be smart, but it just didn't work. So the first time it actually happened, there was no protection. So even with the best intentions, many of them didn't end up using condoms. And in particular, one said, I had the condom, but I didn't have the lube. Because at the time, no one told me, oh, just because you have a condom doesn't mean you can skip the lube. You kind of need that. So there was a lot of struggle before actually, like, inside intercourse. So there was really a great deal of lack of models or information about what they really needed in that first time. Many of them also talked about that first time being about trying it out, but in both ways. For some, it was trying it out to see if I was really gay or how I felt by experimenting either with someone of the same gender or with someone of the other gender. And sometimes if they talked about planning at all, it was in this context of, I wanted to try it out just to see. So for example, one young man said, on my own, I think I planned it. I was 18, I was pretty sure I was gay, but I wanted to experience doing something homosexual before I would like come out and then find out later, oh, never mind, I didn't like that. And a young woman said, I was actually with a guy after I was with a girl, and so I kind of compared the two. With a guy, it didn't mean anything, and I preferred girls ever since. So clearly, even when they were attracted or had a sense of knowing what their orientation was, many of them talked about this idea of needing to try it out. And with respect to that, in terms of their relationships, they were about equally divided, about a third, a third, were either in a relationship that they defined as a boyfriend or a girlfriend, were not in any kind of relationship, and it just sort of one thing led to the next, or they identified themselves as friends. And if they were not in a relationship, it was sometimes because it was the only other gay person available, like this one young man who said, yeah, I saw him every day at school. I knew him as the other gay guy at school. And so their opportunities and options for partners were very limited. And we think that some of that lack of planning had to do with an opportunity that presented itself when those opportunities were very limited. In terms of social expectations, and particularly for the women, there was a great deal of discussion about the expectation to do it with a guy first, just to be sure. So even among their friends who knew that they thought they were gay, they were telling them to do it with a guy just to be sure. And also they talked a great deal about ignorance, and I think you'll appreciate this, the later presentation. So one young woman said, I had my first experience with a guy when I was 14, and when it happened, I talked to friends, because I was very bi-curious at the time, and they were like, you have to try it with a guy first. That's the right thing to do. Another said, they didn't say socially acceptable when we were 14, but they said, you know, you shouldn't do anything with girls. It's just not right. And with respect to the ignorance, a lot of people will be like, if you use strap-ons or other things, then why not just be with a guy? If you're attracted to a girl that looks like a dude, why don't you just date a dude? And I find it really irritating, and it upsets me when people are like, why not just be with a guy? So the women were very, very concerned about this social pressure that they felt, and yet at the same time, the messages that what they were doing was somehow didn't make sense to other people. And as one woman said, well, even if there weren't toys, I would still like women. So they were very clear about that connection. I'm going to actually stop there talking about the experiences. We'll come back if you have any questions. And Eva is going to talk about what we learned about what they were hearing at home and at school and the nature of those messages and the impact of those messages on them. Thank you.
Hello. So the other thing we were looking at is what were the messages that the young people were getting as they were growing up at home and from school? And what we found was when they were at home, there was a message about that most of them identified one parent as the one they would talk to or confide in about sex or sexuality. And in a lot of cases, that parent would tell them, don't tell your mom or don't tell your dad. They wouldn't understand. So there were secrets in these households. And that was, by the way, if they were out at all. Some were not out to their parents at all. So, for example, one young man said, I only talk to my dad because he's more open friends. He knows gay people and all that stuff. But my mom is, I would not say conservative, she just doesn't know as much, I guess. My mom was more comfortable around her with everything because, I'm not kidding, all of her friends are gay and she's completely open about it. My father, not at all. He wants nothing to do with gay people. He's a complete phobe of everything, so I never told him. And another young man, so from that, my mom was like, we're not telling your dad. And what was interesting is that in the general groups, people reported mostly getting messages from their mom. In this group, in the LGB group, it was really more about which parent was more likely to be receptive to them, and there didn't seem to be a pattern about gender of the parent. The types of messages that they remember were either in the form of silence, which was interpreted as either no message, or as a strong negative message, or they were heteronormative. So when you and your boyfriend do something, don't get her pregnant, this is how babies are made. So none of the participants recalled specific messages that were inclusive or not heteronormative, other than when they were specifically talking about themselves to their parents and their own sexual orientation. They recalled that their parents assumed heterosexuality, and even those who said that they suspected their parents knew they were not heterosexual, with comments like, I'll love you no matter who you are, they don't remember any direct conversations about sex that were not heteronormative. So they're getting a lot of double messages. The other interesting thing we found is that participants mentioned gay or lesbian siblings, cousins, aunts, step-parents, partners of parents, and friends' parents that they could turn to for information about their developing sexuality, as well as to get information about sexual experience as an alternative to their parents. So we were pretty surprised by the number of LGB family members and within their very close circle that they were able to identify as sources. What they remember about their parents' reactions to discovering that they were lesbian, gay, or bisexual, there were a fair number of participants who are still not out to their parents and who don't know whether or not their parents know because they just don't talk about it. But among those who did come out, including a few who were outed, parents seemed largely unprepared to offer any kind of guidance or support. One young woman told us the story of having already come out to her mother a few years earlier to what seemed to be total and unconditional acceptance, and then she was saying that she was watching a TV program with her mom, and J-Lo was on TV, and she expressed that she thought J-Lo was really hot, really attractive, and her mother just lost it. And she said, I think that was when, you know, my mom realized that it wasn't just a passing phase. The other thing that one needs to ask is, when they got this response of, I already knew, you kind of wonder if they already knew, why had they never said anything to indicate that they already knew? Because the participants really expressed a lot of concern and fear and trepidation, and then they would come out and their parents said, I already knew. So as an example, they didn't know how to talk about it. This young man said, so they just told me as if I were straight. So I think they were like trying. They were never not accepting of it. They were just getting used to it because it was an odd transition for them as well as for myself. So it was just, they did what they needed to do. I educated myself. It really wasn't that difficult. I just went on Google. Wasn't that bad. And that's a theme that actually came up a lot, especially among the men. But what we did find that many participants were quite forgiving of their parents' shortcomings. They needed their parents. Not all of them, but a lot of them did and were willing to extend them the benefit of the doubt. So then we asked them, what would have been helpful? What would you have liked from your family? What would you have liked from home that could have been helpful to you? And as an example, this young woman said, I had a talk after I got my first period. So think how young she was, and how old she was by the time she got the first talk. And that was like the whole, you can't have sex with guys kind of thing. I wish it was more diverse. My mother gave me that talk, and my dad and stepmom. I wish I had got a little bit more explanation, because even at the time that I was having the talk, I didn't even understand what sex was. I didn't even know what a lesbian was, what LGBT meant. I had no idea. I was 12. I didn't know what she was talking about. I was like, what? Mom said, just don't go anywhere alone with a guy now. Got it. Thanks, Mom. And a young man who said, I would have liked more information, at least more availability. When I was 16, I had no idea where to even get a condom. And if I had parents that were positive about it, that were like, they're here if you need them, then like not pushing me to have sex, but like in case I did, at least it'd be there. But I wish that my parents had supplied more positivity or at least talked about it. So even the, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual kids, a lot of whom, well, they're not kids now, but at the time, were sort of concerned about their parents' reactions, really expressed the wish that their parents would have talked to them more. And that, by the way, held true for our general groups as well, overall. And we know this in the literature, right? Young people want their parents to talk to them. So what were they learning from school? Not surprisingly, and by the way, these recollections were consistent from the first phase with the general groups and the LGB groups. There's real consensus. It's biologically based. It's not enough. It's all about disease and pregnancy and abstinence, and then wear a condom. not very contextual, though. So one young woman said, I was too afraid to look up stuff, and my sex ed class was just like, these are the genitals, have a good day. Anyone remember that class? Another young woman, it was like, you're gonna get hair here, you're gonna get boobs. That was pretty much it. Another young woman said, all I learned was what sex ed taught me, and sex ed didn't teach me very much. And then a young man, we had a sex ed class. It was literally just anatomy. They never talked about sex. I love it. We had a sex ed class, but we never talked about sex. Can you imagine going to math class and never talking about math? But I digress. Okay. Abstinence. One young woman said, my school would be like, if you want to have sex, don't use a condom. Oh, my gosh. Public health people? Scary stuff, right? But don't bring unwanted babies into this world, so just don't have sex. That was basically what they were preaching. And a young man who said he gave a presentation on how condoms don't work and that you can still get pregnant from using condoms, so just be abstinent. And a lot of us were like, what is this even about? Which was interesting because that young man said they never talked about sex. They never explained sexuality. They just had this guy, you know, this teacher just say all this stuff, and they didn't even know what sex was. But he was talking about, you know, just be abstinent. Okay, so that was the content. What were the characteristics of the sexuality education? It was heteronormative, not relevant, and they wanted to know, how do gay people do it? How do I learn that? Not much sex-positive content overall, a lot of scare tactics. There was a range from very homophobic through not particularly supportive to somewhat supportive to fully inclusive, very clinical, no discussion of emotions, and a lot of them identified like one particular teacher who was supportive. Some of the participants couldn't remember much about the content because they felt it was just not relevant to them. We found this was different from the first group, who had lots to say about sex education, their experiences. This group, not as much. And because of the heteronormative nature, many of the LGB adolescents tune out, when in fact we know that LGB or questioning young people can be at even greater risk for pregnancy and disease prevention, and disease transmission than their heterosexually identified peers. So having them tune out on those pieces can be particularly dangerous. So the heteronormative, first I always got abstinence-only message, but every once in a while, if you do, make sure you're safe. Then on top of that, it was guys have sex with a girl. So I got the don't have sex, but if you do, have sex with the opposite gender kind of thing. And a young woman said it was truly informative because it was like the heterosexual sex they were talking about. They didn't touch upon like gay or lesbian sex. It didn't make me question my sexuality because I already knew, but it did make me wonder if I'd want to have sex with a male. And this quote from this young woman is consistent with the findings that Lisa presented a few minutes ago about feeling pressure to have sex with someone of the other gender. And the quote shows that the heteronormative nature of sexuality education in schools contributed to that pressure. Scare tactics. They split us into boy-girl, and they told us, the guys, that we should save ourselves for our wives so we'd be clean for our wives, and the girls were told that they'd get a bunch of UTIs and STIs and all that. So it was more fear than education. And this teacher had a pop-up book. It was a vagina, and she just opened it up right in front of my face and was like, if you have sex, you're going to have cervical cancer, and if you have cervical cancer, you're going to die. I remember getting really hot. I stood up and passed out. There was a range from homophobic through fully inclusive. So, you know, I hated sex ed inside my school because I felt as though the teacher was homophobic. They don't really focus on homosexual activities, provide safe sex, because, you know, this population is rising and I feel they should offer it in schools. Versus, when we had high school, that's when we started learning all about different types of sexual orientations, like identity and all that, and they were really good about that. So what would they have liked? So we figured it out on our own, but it would have been nice to say, well, this is how it works. You just know that it could feel like this or that. You could just make smart decisions. And there's differences. Obviously, lesbians don't have sex the same way men do, men and women do. Schools should educate even if there aren't any lesbians in the room, because you don't know, and people are just going to say, I'm this in the middle of high school. And they could have taught about gay and lesbian sex, then it would have been beneficial for everyone. That sense of you need to teach about LGB sexuality and not just for the LGB kids. And then the final thing was a lot of them just went to the internet. And this is particularly true among the men in the room. Okay, so What are our conclusions? Well, when we look at messages from home, if you see the ones with the checks by them, those are ones that we found across the board, phase one and phase two. So messages are mostly about pregnancy, nothing about intimacy or relationships, or the messages they really didn't want to know. In the heterosexual participants, it was more about my parents didn't want to know that I was having sex. In the lesbian and gay young people, it was they didn't want to know I was lesbian or gay. They had trouble talking to their parents and fear of their parents' reactions. What was new about this group and different was that they sought people outside of their families, particularly LGB family members and friends, for help and guidance, and that they were keeping secrets. School, same across the board, too little, too late, negative, no relationships, no intimacy, no pleasure, very little focus on lesbian and gay sexuality. What was different about this group was that they found a particular, or they sought out a particular teacher or staff member that could be helpful. It felt irrelevant, and they perhaps remembered it less because of this. There were huge variations in school environments, whether or not they had a GSA, by the way, and that internet was a really important source of learning. As far as planning had happened, in the phase, we found real differences. So in the first phase, even though when they said it just happened, it turns out that there was a lot of planning that went on. And just happened was rare. This was the reverse. In the LGB group, just happened was the norm. So there was much less planning. And the time between their first experience of any type and their first sex, as they defined it, was shorter test driving phase. So while heterosexual kids are sort of figuring out the sexual landscape through different kinds of sexual behaviors, gay and lesbian kids didn't have access to that. And then condom use intentions were good, but the actual use was lower. As far as experience, again, the experiences of, in the first phase, women were more likely to describe regret of their first experience, pain, lack of pleasure. And first sex among men was generally positive overall, unless they felt like they didn't perform well enough. Among the lesbian, gay, bisexual kids, it was the reverse. Women described their first experience with women as pleasurable. Men described their first experiences with men as mixed, mostly because they had no idea what it was supposed to be like. They didn't know what they were doing, what they were supposed to be doing. It was more likely to be painful, less likely to be using lube, and less likely to use protection. And in general, based on all of the messages from school, from home, from society, there were just no good models for LGB youth. Okay, implications, 2 minutes, perfect. That the timing of the interventions of this group have to be earlier. So in the first study, what we concluded was that there is a time when young people are thinking about having sex where we can intervene in that critical time to give them important messages to help make it better, safer, healthier, and or later. That window doesn't exist for this group. And so we need to have these interventions for LGB folks much earlier, which goes the reverse of what most conventional wisdom is, right? They're not ready for that yet. We need to make it, and so those messages tend to come later. They need to be earlier. And they need to be fully inclusive and not just for the LGB kids. We need to design sex education programs to help parents communicate in ways that encourage young people to critically examine when and under what conditions they want to have sex, that go beyond biology and disease prevention, and to help them explore their sexuality in comfort and safety. Such programs and messages, whether at home or school, need to discuss sex in the context of relationships, intimacy, and pleasure. That was missing across the board for everyone. And we need to be more proactive LGB-friendly responsible internet sources that are more than just about condoms and coming out. I was part of a study that looked at some of the best sites out there on sex education for young people, and while they were largely LGB-friendly, they mostly dealt with coming out, and it can be hard to be gay, but you can do it, and it can be positive, but nothing about how do you have sex? How do you be sexual? How do you find someone? So we need more about that. Disease and pregnancy prevention messages are geared to heterosexual youth, and this places LGB and questioning youth at even greater risk. Because remember, we talked about they are at higher risk for pregnancy and disease prevention, and they are tuning out because they don't feel it's relevant. And what they suggest to us, what they suggest, is that if we want young people to be healthier or safer, to wait longer, or to feel comfortable about their sexuality, then the messages have to be as complex and multi-layered as their decision-making process should be. So their awareness of their orientation shouldn't have to be so troubled. They should be able to spend more time learning how to navigate their sexual experiences that straight kids get to do.
Good?
Done. Thank you.